Hi, I'm Francesca, a registered nutritional therapist, and you're listening to another episode of the Empowered Perimenopause podcast. Welcome. My aim is to bring you down-to-earth, conversational episodes that help you develop a deeper understanding of how your body's changing in your 40s, and most importantly, how you can support yourself throughout this wonderful transitional phase of your life. Join me for my solo episodes and also episodes with guests for fun, fresh, truthful chat on all things health and happiness in your 40s. And now on to the episode. Hi, and welcome back to another episode with me, your host, Francesca. So today's episode is inspired again by a few questions that I had from different people over the last few weeks in the perimenopause masterclasses, workshops that I've delivered over the last couple of weeks. I did one in person where I live in Margate, and I also did one online. So I had some questions with regards to autoimmunity, so moving into perimenopause with a diagnosed autoimmune condition or inflammatory condition, immune system dysregulation, and how things really do flare up as we move into perimenopause. And the questions were really around how moving into perimenopause impacts those conditions or situations, and vice versa, and sort of how to know what's causing what. And it just inspired me to create a podcast on it. A couple of episodes ago, I did talk about autoimmunity and SIBO and mold illness specifically. That was also based on a listener question that I got a couple of months ago. So that was more around a specific question. So there'll be a lot of overlap in this episode, but otherwise we are going to sort of dive into a few different things. So there's, you know, it's just really important, I think, for women in midlife to understand the topic of autoimmunity, because whether or not we already have a diagnosis of any autoimmunity, for example, like rheumatoid arthritis or Hashimoto's, which is autoimmunity against the thyroid gland, perimenopause can be a time, and I've talked about this before, where autoimmunity flares if we knew it was already there, or it rears, it kind of comes to the surface and we realize it's there. And, you know, it may have been bubbling underneath the surface for many, 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 many years. And then moving into perimenopause, because of the changes in hormones, it can sort of bring it out to the surface. So it is something that, you know, it's not going to happen to everybody. It's just important that we kind of understand it. You know, if you've ever been told you've got thyroid issues or joint pain that no one can quite explain, or strange symptoms that seem to sort of come and go, there's no rhyme or reason, then today's episode is definitely for you, because hopefully you'll find something in here that just helps to give you a bit of insight into what could be going on, and then, you know, where to kind of go to get more help. Because the thing is, perimenopause is a time of incredible, significant hormonal change. But those changes, they, you know, we talk about them in terms of how they affect our periods and our mood and our sleep and our energy and all of those things, which are significantly impacted. But they can also shift your immune system, sometimes in ways that spark or intensify autoimmune conditions, as I said. So let's unpack all this in today's episode. So first of all, I've done episodes on this in the past, but you know, this is a whole new one, so I'm going to go back to the beginning. What is autoimmunity? So autoimmune conditions happen when your immune system, which is designed to protect us, it starts to mistakenly, unwantedly attack your own tissues in specific organs. It's like your body gets confused and sort of turns on itself. So some common examples of the different systems in the body where this can happen is the Hashimoto's thyroiditis, which I just mentioned, and that is when the immune system is starting to attack tissues in the thyroid gland. It's a really common root cause of low thyroid, underactive thyroid in women, quite a big percentage actually. This is the underlying cause, but they don't necessarily know that, because they're not actually, when they get their thyroid tested through their GP, for example, they're mostly not, most women aren't actually having, most doctors aren't ordering tests that include the two main antibodies for against the thyroid gland, which would highlight whether, you know, identify whether a person has Hashimoto's or they just have underactive thyroid purely based in thyroid function. The other areas are rheumatoid arthritis, so that's where the tissues of the joints are targeted. Then you've got lupus, which is affecting skin, joints, kidneys, and other area, other systems in the body. Type 1 diabetes, this is when the tissues are destroying insulin-producing cells in the pancreas. And multiple sclerosis, which is damaging the protective coating around the nerves. So autoimmune symptoms, they can be subtle, they can flare up suddenly, or they can simmer quietly in the background for years before any diagnosis is made. And what's most common would be rheumatoid arthritis and Hashimoto's thyroiditis. But of course, you know, the others can be an issue for some women as well. And so the link between autoimmunity and perimenopause is that, I mean, essentially there's three key life phases when autoimmunity can strike or flare or kind of show its face and be identified in enough to be a diagnosis. And that's postpartum, so just after you've had a baby, perimenopause, and menopause itself. So perimenopause is this other phase in life where it can flare or come to the surface. And that's because our hormones, specifically estrogen and progesterone, they have a direct impact on how our immune system functions. Estrogen in particular, it helps to modulate immune activity, so keep it, you know, in check, basically. And when estrogen starts to fluctuate more erratically, like it does during perimenopause, even from the earlier stages, like late 30s, early 40s, that can start to disrupt that delicate immune balance that estrogen has been so good at protecting. And then later on in perimenopause, as estrogen starts its decline towards reaching menopause itself, then that sort of immune dysregulation can become even more prominent, and then more flares in autoimmunity, or more more kind of like, well, we start to see that it's actually there. And so that can then, you know, start to, that fluctuation in estrogen, the decline in estrogen later in perimenopause can start to trigger immune confusion in women who are already genetically susceptible. So this doesn't affect everyone at all, but it's just those who are susceptible to autoimmunity, either already or, you know, for it to come. And progesterone also impacts immune activity. It's a very helpful hormone for modulating the immune system as well, in different ways to estrogen, but does help. So when we start to lose progesterone in our earlier stages of perimenopause, so this would be late 30s, early 40s, progesterone is already starting to decline. So that can start to impact. And it's also a very anti-inflammatory hormone, and so is estrogen. So once we start to lose progesterone first, which is the first thing that starts to happen in perimenopause before we actually start to lose estrogen, that the loss of the anti-inflammatory effects of progesterone can have a big impact on, for example, joint health. So we can start to notice joint aches and pains. And then when estrogen does eventually start its decline, it's erratic at first, and then it starts its decline while it's also still erratic. And we then lose more anti-inflammatory protection from estrogen, and then more flares of potential you know, joint aches and pains and or autoimmunity as well. So it can be, you know, joint flares without autoimmunity, but it can also be joint flares that are actually an autoimmune picture. So I've talked about in a previous episode this thing known as the autoimmune triad. So it's basically a doctor, an Italian doctor called Dr. Alessio Fasano. He's a world leading expert in autoimmunity. He's described what's needed for an autoimmune condition to develop. And there's this triad, he calls it this autoimmune triad. So three things in a person are needed in order to trigger an autoimmune condition, and then for it to be diagnosed. So the first one is a genetic predisposition in the first place. So if it's running in the family, you know, if your mother had, your mum and your grandmother and your auntie, and possibly your sister, have rheumatoid arthritis, for example, then you may have the genetic predisposition to it as well. The second thing is something known as increased intestinal permeability, also known as leaky gut. I've talked about this before. You may or may not have listened to that episode. You may already know about leaky gut, or the correct term is intestinal permeability. That's when the lining of the gut is no longer as strong and the cells aren't as tightly packed together as they should be. And it starts to allow particles, undigested food and toxins and other particles to seep through that now weakened gut lining into the system, into the whole body system. And that triggers inflammatory reactions, which can increase our risk for autoimmunity. So that's the second thing. And then the third thing is a particular trigger, which is usually something like stress, a very, very stressful situation on top of, you know, history of stress. And then there's this one bout of stress that's sort of like the straw that breaks the camel's back. The other thing is infection. The other triggers could be environmental toxins or hormonal changes. For example, those that occur during perimenopause. So a genetic predisposition, increased intestinal permeability, and some sort of trigger. Now, because of this, you know, the way this autoimmune triad is described, obviously we can't change genetic predisposition, but we can change the health of our gut lining. So if there is increased intestinal permeability, leaky gut, we can reverse that. We can fix that, or at least make it a lot better. And if there's a trigger like stress, infection, environmental toxins, we can do things to support those things, to reverse those things, get rid of the infection or reduce the infection, get rid of the environmental toxic load, reduce it, manage the stress that's been the straw that breaks the camel, that's broken the camel's back. We can do things to support that. Then the hormonal changes of perimenopause, we can also do a lot to support that. That's what my work is. That's what this whole entire podcast is. It's what all of my work is, my one-to-one work, my group work, my membership. It's all about, I mean, that is essentially my message, is that this is what's happening in perimenopause. Here's the physiology, but this is what we can do to support those hormonal changes and make them be less impactful. Mostly through nutrition and lifestyle changes, because all of the symptoms, including things like autoimmunity, do respond really well to nutrition and lifestyle changes and some really well-targeted supplementation as well. So yeah, you can't change your genes, but you can absolutely influence these other two parts of the triangle, the leaky gut situation and the trigger. So let's break those down. So your gut lining, let's talk about leaky gut. So your gut lining is supposed to be this strong barrier that keeps nutrients in, lets nutrients come in to the body. So that the nutrients are allowed to seep through the gut lining, the gut barrier, and get into the system and then go and work on all the different cells and tissues and systems and organs we want them to work on. But that strong gut barrier, after it's let the nutrients into the system through the gut lining, it keeps toxins and pathogens and undigested food particles out of the rest of the body, keeps them within the gut itself. But when that gut lining, that strong barrier becomes compromised, so it gets weakened over time, things that should stay in the gut sneak out into the bloodstream, and that activates an immune reaction. So the immune system is thinking, what is all of this? Why is all this random stuff in the bloodstream? It shouldn't be there. These are not nutrients. These are foreign things that should have stayed in the gut. It doesn't just think, oh, it's just that leaky gut, I'll let it go. It says, what is all this stuff? It shouldn't be here. And it mounts this immune response, which is essentially an inflammatory response, because it starts to release lots of different chemicals from the immune system to help fight these toxins and kill them off. And it's, you know, it creates this situation of inflammation. And then over time, this constant immune activation can lead to the situation of having chronic inflammation. We're chronically inflamed. So all, you know, throughout our system, we're chronically fighting inflammation, probably not very well if the immune system is constantly being activated, because you constantly have this weaker gut lining. And then over time, that chronic inflammation leads to autoimmune activity. So that's the good news there, is that we can manipulate that. We can't manipulate genes, but we can manipulate, manage this sort of situation here with leaky gut. So first of all, you need to know, obviously, that that's potentially what could be going on. And then you need to know what to do to start reducing this situation and making it better. So some common causes of leaky gut include things like a diet that's very high in ultra processed foods. I don't really say processed foods that much, because there are some healthy processed foods out there, right? If you think of the literal sense of something being processed, then, you know, a good quality, well-made hummus that's made with olive oil, not sunflower or rapeseed oil, one that's made with olive oil, good quality hummus, that is essentially a processed food, but it's a healthy processed food. I can't think of the stuff off the top of my head now, but there's other, you know, there's other things very similar to that, like a pesto, a very well-made, good quality pesto made with, again, with olive oil rather than rapeseed or vegetable or sunflower. These are a form of processed foods. It's foods that's been processed into the sauce, but they are, that's a form of healthy processed food. It's the ultra processed foods, you know, things like all of these sort of, well, confectionery and long life baked goods that have got a whole long list of ingredients in there that just don't need to be there. Even certain breads that we see on our shelves today, if you look at the ingredients, there should only be three things in there, you know, the water, whatever the flour that they've used, and maybe some salt. But you'll see this long list in your regular commercial breads that's just full of all sorts of things, including sugars and oils. It's your, you know, really low quality sort of protein bars and breakfast bars and all these, and biscuits and all these sorts of things. Your crisps, your frankfurters, you know, things that aren't real food. So it's a diet high in ultra processed foods and also high in sugar. So again, all your sort of confectionery and fizzy drinks and, you know, your obvious sugar sources, but also high in, unfortunately, alcohol is quite damaging to the gut lining over time if it's chronic and all the time. And white flour sort of carbohydrates. So all the carbohydrates you can think of that are made with white flour. So breads, white pasta, you know, pastries, bagels, wraps. These, the sort of white flour, the highly processed white flour, if that's what we're eating, relying on quite a lot for our carbohydrates, that can be quite aggressive on the gut lining as well. And then other causes are things like chronic stress. So in a roundabout way, the, you know, dysregulation of cortisol and other hormones like insulin when we're chronically stressed can create this inflammatory picture in the body that can increase, lead to chronic inflammation over time. Having infections in the gut or something known as dysbiosis. So that's essentially just imbalances in the bacteria that's in our gut. So an overgrowth of the unfriendly strains of bacteria, not enough of the friendly protective strains. There could be an actual infection, so that maybe could be a parasite from historic food poisoning or a trip abroad that's, you know, never actually been identified. Lots of people walking around with typical sort of IBS symptoms, and they'll say things like, I've been diagnosed with IBS, and they're kind of just leaving it there. But there's always a root cause for those sorts of symptoms. It could be this dysbiosis, so they're, as I said, the imbalance of bacteria. It could be specifically SIBO, which is small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. So the bacteria has overgrown specifically in the small intestine. And as I said, it could be an actual pathogenic bacteria or parasite that was picked up in the past and that person just doesn't know. And if they get in there and really address that imbalance and clear out any pathogens, if they are there, then that can really just, you know, stop this IBS situation. So that's something else that can lead to leaky gut. As I said, alcohol and also certain medications, specifically the non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, like your kind of ibuprofens and, you know, just relying on those a lot. Obviously, if you need to take them every so often, that's fine. You know, few and far between if we need to, preferably with food, not on an empty stomach, so that that lining has some protection. The gut lining is protected by your food. But, you know, I'm talking about people who are using these medications like all the time. So they would be at higher risk of damage to their gut lining. Frequent eating. So this might not be commonly known, but people who are eating, you know, every 2 to 3 hours, ideally, we want to just eat 3 square meals each day with a kind of 4, 4.5, 5 hour gap between each one, and then a good 12 hour fast between finishing dinner and starting breakfast the next day. That allows that 12 hour fasting window, and then the little mini fasting windows in between each meal allows the gut lining this downtime to just repair itself, because every time we eat, the gut lining, the cells in the gut lining, they are supposed to, rightly so, they're supposed to open up to allow the nutrients to be passed through and absorbed right into the body so the system can use those nutrients. But then after eating, those holes should be sewn back up again. But if we keep eating every 2 to 3 hours, even if it's just a couple of nuts or a, you know, square of dark chocolate or something, we are constantly asking throughout the day that gut lining to open up, and it never really gets that downtime to repair. So I'm always encouraging us, you know, for various reasons, including insulin management, insulin sensitivity, blood sugar balance, metabolic health, really important, but also for gut health, to just be eating 3 square meals per day in a 12-hour window and then a 12-hour fasting window. We can increase that fasting window overnight to 13, maximum 14 hours, I would suggest, for women. That's a different topic altogether. But yeah, the 12-12 is ideal. And possibly the 11-13 or the 10-14. And for some people, gluten can be quite irritating for their gut lining. Not everybody, but for some people, if they're eating gluten specifically every day, you know, if someone's relying on every single day, they're having the same gluten bread, and particularly the bread that's not made very well. So it's the stuff that we see on the local supermarket shelves. It's full of loads of stuff. And, you know, processed wheat flours, then that can be irritating for a lot of people in the gut lining. So we have to remember that the gut lining is essentially part of our immune system. It houses around 75% of our immune cells. So, you know, that's huge. We don't think about it like that. We think of the immune system, we think of the gut, we think of these two separate organs, separate systems. But yeah, that the lining of our gut is where 75% of our immune cells are sitting. That's where they live. And so if this barrier breaks down, that's how immune dysregulation can follow. And the friendly protective strains of bacteria, you know, the reasons why we would take a probiotic, for example, the reasons why we want to ideally avoid antibiotics. And if we've had to take antibiotics, we should follow that with a month or two of a good quality probiotic to help replenish the friendly bacteria, because the friendly bacteria, they line that gut lining that houses, you know, 75% of our immune cells. The friendly bacteria is lining it, like they're like army patrol, and so they're helping to protect that lining, that immune system lining, from breaking down. And when we have low levels of friendly bacteria and high levels of the unfriendly stuff, again, that's why that can break down over time. And immune dysregulation follows. And what follows immune dysregulation over time can be autoimmunity for some people, especially, particularly if they have a genetic predisposition. So common triggers for autoimmunity. So alongside a leaky gut, the triggers that play a really significant role in tipping the balance towards autoimmunity in a person, as I said, include the hormonal changes that we experience in perimenopause. So particularly the erratic fluctuations in estrogen and the decline in progesterone, because number one, those hormones are both so anti-inflammatory, so they're going to be protecting that gut lining from inflammation and the system itself, the body system. But also the erratic nature of estrogen can just cause immune dysregulation, because estrogen is so helpful at regulating, modulating the immune system. So when it starts behaving erratically, the immune system loses that protection. Chronic stress, as I said, dysregulates cortisol and can weaken immune regulation. Cortisol is very important as part of the immune regulation in the body. It's got so many jobs, cortisol. Infections, like, as I said, gut infections. So it could be that we have a parasite that we don't know about, that we might just have high levels of a particularly unfriendly or pathogenic strain of bacteria that's continuing to thrive because it's just been left there unaddressed. So it's like, way, I'm just going to keep going. And also if we have low levels of friendly bacteria to help push these pathogenic bacteria out, then again, it continues to thrive. But it could also be things like Epstein-Barr virus, EBV. This is really common that people have EBV, and it's something that you're really just trying to keep dormant as opposed to trying to get rid of. There's also what's known as H. pylori, Helicobacter pylori. These are things that your GP generally can test for. You can rule these out through a GP, H. pylori, Epstein-Barr. Even Lyme disease can be something, you know, it's more common in the States, but it is still a thing in the UK. So these sorts of things can be ruled out by your GP, but what can't be ruled out with your GP, or tested, I should say, with your GP, conventionally is a comprehensive stool analysis. So for example, a test that's really going into everything that's going on in the gut and looking at the whole entire microbiome. So it's looking at all the different strains of friendly bacteria and pathogenic bacteria, looking for any parasites, any infections. It's looking at particular markers that can indicate a leaky gut. They wouldn't necessarily diagnose, but they can indicate, oh yeah, that, you know, this person has high levels of, for example, a marker called secretory IgA. If those levels are high, you know, that can suggest there's some sort of inflammation, and where might the inflammation be coming from? Possibly a leaky gut. So they give, and they also give indications on particular enzymes that might be missing or low that help to digest protein, fat, carbohydrates. So these comprehensive stool analyses, they are not generally done conventionally. These are what's known as functional tests. So these are tests that you would have to go private for, again, not necessarily with a private conventional GP, but actually privately with a functional medicine practitioner. So that would include somebody like myself. So as a qualified nutritional therapist, we are trained and qualified to run these functional tests. We are affiliated with a particular lab that we will use to order and send these test kits out to our clients. We then get the results. We interpret those results for our clients and obviously have consultations with them to go through the results and tell them what they need to do with regards to nutrition, lifestyle, and targeted supplements. So once you want to maybe rule out things like EBV, H. pylori, or even Lyme disease with your general practitioner or gastroenterologist, you then, you know, if those things have been ruled out, and also things like inflammatory bowel disease, Crohn's disease, if those have been ruled out, because they're the more sinister things, but you're still experiencing IBS like symptoms and potentially thinking there's a leaky gut situation going on, that's when you might want to go and work with somebody like myself and ask for a comprehensive stool analysis. The test is about £350. It's a lot of money, but it is well worth it. It's an absolute wealth of information that a practitioner can work with to support somebody's gut. So that's just a kind of side note there. So we're still talking about particular triggers for autoimmunity. So we've said the hormonal changes of perimenopause, chronic stress, various gut infections, and now environmental toxins. So this could include things like pesticides, overload. You know, we're not going to be organic everything. We do live in the real world and we do have to pick our battles, but it could be a real sort of heavy overload of pesticides due to maybe even farming practices that you're involved in or where you grew up, for example, or heavy metal, a big burden of heavy metals, again, due to where you grew up or a job that you might do. It could be, I had a testing client a few weeks ago who is a tattoo artist, you know, and as much as we don't want her to give up her job, and she doesn't have to do that, she just needed to be aware that there is this increased risk of chemical exposure, that so she would probably, you know, she does have technically a higher toxic load burden in her body compared to somebody who isn't a tattoo artist and hasn't been exposed to those sorts of chemicals on a day-to-day basis. So again, she doesn't have to leave her job. It's just to know that that's the case and know that we really need to be sort of supporting her liver and her gut a little bit more than the average person. But this can also include chemicals in personal care products and household cleaning stuff. So I talk about these a lot, endocrine disrupting chemicals. These are chemicals that can disrupt, they've been shown to disrupt the hormonal system in the body, but they can also, you know, they'll add to the general toxic load, environmental toxic load in the body, which can exacerbate the situation of leaky gut. It's usually not just one thing. It's the combination of the stress, the leaky gut, that particular environmental trigger that pushes the immune system into overdrive and can trigger autoimmunity or, you know, a diagnosis. And then if you add to that the genetic predisposition, then it's far more likely, basically. But again, this doesn't apply to everyone. This is just, you know, how it might be showing up for you if all of those things apply to you. So a quick word on thyroid autoimmunity. So this is known as Hashimoto's. Hashimoto's thyroiditis is one of the most common autoimmune conditions in women, particularly common during perimenopause. It's something I myself will check now every year. As I'm nearly 46 now, I've been checking my thyroid, a full thyroid panel, for the last 5 or so years, and I will get all my clients to do the same thing. I want every client to do a full thyroid panel, and they're quite easy to do, not necessarily through the GP, because the GP is only testing TSH and usually T4, T3 if you're lucky. But what we really want to test is the thyroid autoimmune antibodies, basically. I'll talk about that in a second. But a lot of women are told that they've got an underactive thyroid. So this is hypothyroidism, but they're never actually told why. They might just be diagnosed with underactive thyroid and given T4. Thyroxine medication to take, which is essentially hormone replacement for thyroid, same way we'd replace estrogen or progesterone. But you know, that they're just sort of given that and then walked away with it. Whereas when we might start hormone therapy for like estrogen or progesterone, it's because we are not making those anymore, because they're made from the ovaries. And during perimenopause, we get the decline in progesterone from the ovaries, and then eventually we get, you know, closer to reaching menopause itself, we start to have that genuine decline in estrogen. And then postmenopause, the ovaries don't make those two hormones anymore, and therefore we replace them. But with thyroid, if we choose to, we replace them. With your thyroid, we shouldn't just be told, well, you've got an underactive thyroid, it's not producing enough thyroid hormone, here's medication. For a lot of women, they do need that medication, but it's also good to understand why they have an underactive thyroid, because there's so much we can do through, again, diet, lifestyle, targeted supplementation to support that. It may mean that you still need to take thyroxine medication forever, which is fine if you need to. But understanding why, you know, like, why does that person have an underactive thyroid? That's what we should want to know. Now, if the reason is due to Hashimoto's, then just replacing thyroid hormone, just giving somebody T4 thyroxine medication, doesn't address the root issue. And the root issue with Hashimoto's is immune dysfunction. If underactive thyroid is not caused by autoimmunity against the thyroid gland, then yeah, it's the thyroid gland that is struggling to make T4, your thyroid hormone, which is then converted in tissues in the body, not in the gland, into the active hormone called T3, the active thyroid hormone. So we need to be making T4 from the thyroid gland in order to convert that into T3. And for some women, yes, it's nothing to do with Hashimoto's or autoimmunity. It's just that their thyroid gland is underactive. But again, we still want to know why. And that's usually like stress, low metabolic rate, under eating, low fat diets, over exercising, all of these things. But coming back to Hashimoto's, which is the autoimmune root cause, if that's the root cause, then just taking T4 is not addressing that root cause. We want to look at immune dysfunction. Why is there immune dysfunction? Is it leaky gut? Is it the chronic stress? Why is there systemic inflammation that's increasing this likelihood of immune dysfunction and then the autoimmunity against the thyroid gland? If we can tackle it there, we can really, really improve that situation tenfold. Maybe they don't need as much medication or any, you know, over time. Most people will still need some level of support from thyroxine medication, but we can really help to support that person's overall well-being and results from those medications if we address the root cause of why their thyroid gland is underactive. So here's what I really want you to know, is that most people with one autoimmune condition have three or more antibodies to different tissues. So what that means is if you have Hashimoto's, then there may be more going on elsewhere. So it might just be that if somebody has rheumatoid arthritis, so if I have a client that says, I've always had rheumatoid arthritis diagnosis and I manage that, then I will, again, really, whether or not they have it or not, I'll always want to test the antibodies against their thyroid glands to see if Hashimoto's is at play as well. Because if they already have one autoimmune condition, the likelihood is they may have another going on somewhere else that just isn't identified. So this is why I will always say, let's do a full thyroid panel, whoever you are, if you're in your 40s, and particularly if you already have autoimmunity elsewhere, because we just want to rule that out. And if it's ruled in, we know what we're working with. And that's really great. That's where the power is. So we've really, in these cases, we need to balance the immune system, not just treat symptoms. Like with rheumatoid arthritis, we really want to be looking at balancing that person's immune system, supporting, reversing, repairing leaky gut, repairing, restoring any, you know, restoring balance within the gut microbiome, helping them to manage their stress, really looking at the foods that they're eating, making sure they're nourishing their system and removing the kind of really ultra processed stuff that's just not helpful. And that can really, really help to put these conditions into, you know, really reduce the symptoms, which is the number one thing we want to do, right? If we're walking around with joint aches and pains due to rheumatoid arthritis and degeneration, then we can reduce that. And for some cases, they can even put that into remission. For some not, but they really do significantly reduce symptoms and issues from it. We also need, if it's thyroid autoimmunity, so that Hashimoto's, we need to support the conversion of T4, that, as I said, the hormone that your thyroid gland actually makes, we need to support that conversion into T3, which is the active thyroid hormone that your body can actually use. And that would be the case whether or not it's an autoimmune root cause of underactive thyroid or not. We still want to be doing that. So what can you do? So if you're in perimenopause and you're experiencing symptoms that just don't feel hormonal, you know there's more to these than just, you know, hormonal. Potentially, maybe you're just like in a lot of pain. Potentially, it could be, let's say, if it's underactive thyroid due to autoimmunity against the thyroid gland, you know, no matter what you do, no matter how much T4 you're prescribed, you just feel absolutely awful. So if you just know that there's just some more going on here, this is not just perimenopause. I can't just chalk everything up to perimenopause, because that's what so many people are doing these days. Oh, it's perimenopause. Well, okay, even if it is just perimenopause, you still want to address it, because as I've said a million times, all of our perimenopause symptoms respond really well to nutrition and lifestyle tweaks. But let's say it's more than just perimenopause, because it's something like an autoimmune condition, immune dysregulation. There's so much we can do to support our body. So here are my five powerful starting points. The first one is healing the gut. So this is where you want to really focus on an anti-inflammatory whole foods diet. So we're removing all the ultra processed foods, ideally removing alcohol as much as possible, removing sort of any sugary drinks. So, you know, I always say don't waste sugar, you know, don't kind of drink your sugar. If anything, you know, enjoy a really lovely cake or something every so often, but just drinking your sugar is, like, to me, a complete waste of sugar. So reducing like fruit juices and things like that, these are concentrated forms of sugar essentially. Switching to whole foods, so just a whole, you know, all your foods in whole food form, basically, unless you're making a, like, I love my protein smoothie that I'll do some mornings for breakfast if I'm in a rush, or it might be a sort of snack here and there. And essentially it's whole foods put into a blender. It's not like this Huel stuff that's just powdered, processed, God knows what. This is like real foods that you would just put into a blender, some berries, some coconut oil, some avocado, some flaxseed, and some really good quality protein powder, which again, you know, literally protein powder is a processed food, but it's not an ultra processed food, depending on the type and the quality that you go for, the brands. So if you go for very good quality, well-made, unflavored protein powders, these are, yes, processed, but they are the healthier form of processed foods, as opposed to the ultra processed stuff that we would find in the likes of Huel and so on, and like Slim Fast and those sorts of things. So don't, you know, there is a gray area. It's not just a black and white with that. Anti-inflammatory diet would include all things like lots of lovely oily fish, sardines, herring, salmon, trout, things like walnuts and flaxseed, turmeric, ginger, using them in smoothies or in cooking or making juices out of them. Probiotics, really good quality probiotics, particularly following any antibiotics that you might have had. Fermented foods like raw sauerkraut, kimchi, and gut repairing nutrients like glutamine, zinc. I talked about those in a few episodes ago. These are really great things to, and collagen as well is great for the gut. But really great for the gut is bone broth. So if you can make your own bone broth, or if you if you want to buy it and that's more convenient, you can afford it. But making your own at home, maybe once a week, and then sipping on about like a mug, half a mug, or, you know, 150 mils of pure bone broth every morning. That's the therapeutic way that we would use bone broth rather than mixing into food. Mixing into food is fine too, but in a therapeutic way where we're really getting the nutrients, the collagen, the glycine from the bone broth, when we're actually, if we want to actually get that to the gut lining, then we would just have it every morning like we would a cup of coffee. It's so wonderful for helping to heal the gut lining. Balancing blood sugar is the second thing. So making sure we're having plenty of protein with every single meal, limiting, as I said, the ultra processed foods and avoiding sugar crashes from, you know, relying on white flour carbohydrates, having too many carbohydrates with our meals, really focusing on protein, getting enough good quality fats, plenty of vegetables, dark green leafy veg, colorful veg with every meal. And as I said earlier, 3 square meals per day, ideally no snacking, and a good 12-hour fast overnight as well. These are just great ways to simply balance blood sugar. The third thing is to manage our stress and support our nervous system every day. This is really important to help re-regulate cortisol, which is already dysregulated as we move into perimenopause and through it. So think about things like walking in nature every day. I've done mine this morning. I'm going out again after this episode recording, out into nature, even just for 20 minutes. Breath work, something as simple as 4-6 breathing. Again, I've done a few minutes of that this morning. I'll probably do some more after this episode. Some gentle yoga here and there, even just 10, 20 minutes at a time can be really helpful. Using things like emotional freedom technique, tapping, EFT tapping, that's very simple to learn on something like YouTube or with a practitioner. And any kind of guided meditation that you like. It might be a lying down yoga nidra body scan meditation, or just a seated guided meditation that you might choose on an app in the morning or an evening before bed. And then number 4 is reducing toxin exposure. So this is where we would want to swap out our household and personal care products where we can for more natural brands. And there's so many more coming out these days, but off the top of my head, because I didn't actually write this down for the episode, but brands like Bio-D, for example, that's just an example of cleaning, household cleaning products and laundry detergents. Ecova would be better than regular, like Bold, for example. Method is another lower toxin, like household cleaning product. I think Bio-D is probably even lower toxin than that. Personal care, cosmetics, you know, switching out your regular high street brands for things like Tropic Skincare, Green People, Sukin, Faith in Nature. These will have much, much lower levels, if any, of the same sort of toxins that we find in our regular commercial stuff. Ideally, filter your water, even just a Brita filter would do for a while. And choose organic where possible. But you can also look up something called the in America, it's the EWG, Environmental Working Group, Clean 15 and Dirty Dozen. The UK has its own version. I think it's PAN, P-A-N. So if you just Googled P-A-N Dirty Dozen or Clean 15, you should get a list of the fruits and vegetables that we could get away with buying non-organic because they don't really have a high pesticide load, versus the ones that if we can, if budget allows, we should try to get organic where possible. And the last one is to look into functional testing. So I've mentioned having the comprehensive gut panel, which is something that you could do through a practitioner like myself. So just get in touch if you want to work with me one-to-one to do that. And also a full thyroid panel with antibodies. So I mentioned that your regular GP will check T4, TSH, possibly T3 if you're lucky. But what we want to be looking at is TSH, free T3, free T4, and the two main antibodies for thyroid. TPO antibodies and TG antibodies, thyroglobulin antibodies. These are the ones that we really want to check because if they're high, then we know there's autoimmunity against the thyroid going on. And then we can really look at, okay, well, if that's what's driving this person's underactive thyroid and the inflammation in their system as well, because there's two things going on at the same time that we just don't want. It's going to make perimenopause worse, and perimenopause will make it worse vice versa. So we want to really get in there and support this person to reduce inflammation in their body. And that will reduce everything that they're experiencing and help safeguard their health for the future. So yeah, get in touch with me if you would like to talk about doing any of those tests and working together one-to-one to kind of interpret your results and go through them with you. But you can get a full thyroid panel from the likes of Medichex, which is a home testing company that's sort of regulated by they work with GPs that help to basically give you a little bit of commentary about the results. But yeah, definitely worth doing something like that, and it's not too expensive either. So it's not about being perfect, but it's trying to understand that we do want to create an internal environment in our bodies where our immune system is calm, responds appropriately, so it doesn't just go haywire because it's like really confused and dysregulated and reacting to unidentified particles coming into the body that shouldn't get there, and it's not in attack mode. We want to keep our immune system calm and regulated. So just think about the things I've just been through, those five things, and see where you can even just do one small thing, make one small change today that can make a big difference to that situation over time, and then just keep building on it. And of course, if you want to work with me one-to-one to go into this in more detail for you and your unique situation, drop me an email, francesca@francescaliparotti.com. Drop me a DM on Instagram if you're over there. Or just look into the show notes. You'll see how to contact me there. I'd love to help you. So my final thoughts before we just wrap up and end this is that autoimmunity does not happen overnight. It doesn't just happen randomly. There's always root causes and contributing factors that are at play for usually many years. And then if there's a genetic predisposition, then there's, you know, the flare comes when there's this trigger. And the trigger can literally be perimenopause. It can trigger it if it was there in the background. And most importantly, I want you to know that there's so much you can do to slow, to stabilize, or even reverse the process of autoimmunity. You do not just have to live with it as it is now. There's a lot we can do to improve it. Whether you're just starting to feel a bit off or you already have a diagnosis, please know that your body isn't broken. It's simply asking for your attention. And the sooner you respond, the better your long-term future health will be. And I would love, honestly love, to support you if this applies to you and you're resonating with this and you're thinking, oh, I thought my body was broken. I don't know what to do. I just assumed I'd have to live with this. If that is you, I would love to work with you, do a full case history on you and see everything that might be going on for you and your unique, you know, situation and your unique health and your goals, and, you know, really put you on a wonderful path to improving your future health once and for all. So thank you for listening today. Please do share this episode with a friend who might resonate and need to hear it, if you know of anyone that does. And of course, I don't really say it enough, but if you'd like to leave a review, I'd really appreciate a 5-star review. You could just give me 5 stars, and or you can also leave a couple of lines about the podcast. That's the only way I can grow the podcast and get it to reach more people. So I would really appreciate that. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you next time. Bye-bye. If you found this episode helpful, then please share it with anyone else who you think could benefit. And consider leaving a rating and a review, as this will help the podcast to reach and help more people. And if you need more guidance on your own health journey, you can grab my free guide, 6 Steps to Mastering Your Hormones in Your 40s, over at francescaliparotti.com, where you can sign up for your free copy. Or you'll also find the link in the show notes.